This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Stephen Van Zandt is in studio. The E Street Band guitarist, actor, and philanthropist has a new release just out on May 3rd called Summer of Sorcery. It is the first in 20 years with his band Little Stephen and the Disciples of Soul. Let's listen to a track called Love Again from Summer of Sorcery.
I feel the Statue of Liberty, so fine and full of grace. Lately every girl I meet has that latest look on their face. I'm not a man for one night stands, that's never been where it's at. Maybe I'm a little old-fashioned, but what's so wrong with that? Up in the Empire State Building, sidewalks up the Chinese.
Stephen Van Zandt is also passionate about music education in public schools. And this is Teacher Appreciation Week, by the way. Stephen has been supporting teachers with his Rock and Roll Forever Foundation and its Teach Rock Project, which creates K-12 national curriculum to address cuts to arts funding in schools. Little Stephen and the Disciples of Soul will be performing on May 8th at the Paramount Theater in Asbury Park, New Jersey. Stephen, welcome to All of It.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. I was reading some of the press around this release, and there was one line that made me very happy for you. It said, you described this as a rebirth for you. How so?
Well, it's a real artistic breakthrough for me. First of all, it's been a big surprise just getting back into music. It was really an accident. Some cat 3 years ago now said, you know, why don't you throw a band together and play my blues festival? And I was like, well, I haven't done that in about 20 years, but let's give it a shot, you know? And that just led to one thing led to another. I started, you know, I became reacquainted with my own work for the first time in a long time. I was like, this stuff's interesting, you know? It's got a certain value to it that I hadn't really thought about through the years, and it has kind of become its own genre, this rock meets soul thing, you know? Mm-hmm. So I said, well, I wonder where it would evolve to if I kind of continued with it. So the important, we did a Soulfire album 2 years ago now, which was a big transitional record because it was all covers of songs I'd played, you know, I'd written for other people. I wasn't ready to write something. So that led to... Summer of Sorcery, and that 2 year Soulfire tour, I just kind of absorbed the stuff and absorbed and absorbed, and finally, you know, you put the whole Soulfire tour in a blender and out came these new songs. This is what I was hoping would happen, and it happened. And the breakthrough is all my previous records before Soulfire, you know, my 80s records were all both very autobiographical and very political. And I wanted to get away from both things, you know. You know, as far as the autobiographical nature of it, I mean, I just examined myself to death and analyzed it, and I was sick of me. You know, I'm like, enough of me already. Let's move on to some other subjects. And politically, you know, things were very different in the 80s. I mean, things were very hidden behind the scenes, and I felt I could be most useful by shining a light on some things like South Africa and things like that. Where now, it's just in your face 24/7. I thought, now, I think my usefulness is getting people away from this, give them a little escape, you know, give them a little sanctuary from the madness going on. So I've been really strictly nonpartisan now for about 12 years since I started my education program. I didn't want some teacher in Mississippi saying, oh, you know, we don't want that education program in here from that liberal guy, you know. So I didn't endorse Obama, and I haven't criticized Trump. You know, I've been really nonpartisan the last 12 years or so. And
what does it feel to live like that? People have a really, you know, people are so polarized now. I'm curious what it feels like to live in that world.
It's weird, especially for me, for being the most political guy ever. Okay, it's been a real challenge, you know. But I just feel like, man, somebody's got to provide some common ground at this point. You know, we got to have some sanctuary where, you know, and we've been doing this the whole 2 year Soulfire tour. I've been saying, like, you know, everybody's welcome. Republicans, Democrats, Independents, I don't care what you are. You're not going to be embarrassed coming to my show. You know, you're not going to be, you know, you're not going to be feel awkward.
You're not making people pick sides, in other words.
No, quite the contrary. Yeah. I'm saying, like, let's use music as our common ground. We have got to start talking to each other again. We got to find some common ground between us. We are heading towards a civil war here, and I'm not exaggerating, you know? So I'm thinking, you know, that's my usefulness at the moment. You know, let's make music that wonderful common ground. And you know, and we just take people on a trip for 2 hours and transport them to some place that I call spiritual nourishment. And they can leave stronger than they came in, and hopefully with a little bit more of an open mind, you know.
Were these songs that were kicking around in your head for a while, or did you sit down and write for this record?
No, that's the thing, man. When I stopped my first five solo albums of the 80s, my only album, you know, my only solo albums, I outlined very specifically right before I even wrote them, before I did them. They were all very thematic, very conceptual, very political, and very linear. And then the music to all of them, however, were all very different from each other, which is not the way to have a career. just for those of you who are thinking of doing such a silly thing as I did, you know, they're all very different musically because they were kind of soundtracks to where I was at that moment. You know, I wasn't thinking career, you know, I was kind of naive that way. Anyway, so I did those five records and I felt kind of done, you know, so the radar comes down. As opposed to when you're in that album tour cycle that we all are in at some point in our lives, your radar is always up. So you're recording little pieces of melody that might come into your head. You might little snatches of, you know, ideas, lyric ideas, and then you go to make an album and you got, you know, hundreds of bits of things. Well, in this case, I had a completely blank slate. I had nothing.
Wow.
You know, yeah. So I was hoping the tour would do it, you know, just kind of absorb that stuff. And about a year into the tour, I started to write, you know, all of a sudden ideas started coming. So what I was hoping would happen happened. And in the end, you know, out popped this album. And in this case, you know, I wanted to do like 12 little movies, you know, that are all, I'm a different character in each and just kind of, you know, exploring different things. The one nice thing at this point in my life is I can really integrate my influences very well. So it all sounds like me, but you can kind of hear where each one's coming from at the same time.
Well, Sam Cooke over here.
Yeah, yeah, a little Tito Puente, a little James Brown, a little Sly and the Family Stone. You know, and I do that intentionally. You know what I mean? I like to leave those breadcrumbs so people can follow them back and hopefully listen to the original artists, you know. But at the same time, it's me. You know what I mean? You can tell it's me at the same time. So that's a nice place to be, you know, artistically. But it's a real breakthrough to not do politics, to not do autobiography, and to have this fictionalized kind of thing. You know, it's just liberating. You know, it's fun.
My guest is Steven Van Zandt. We're talking about his new album, Summer of Sorcery. Did you surprise yourself at all as you were making it?
Yeah.
How
the
so?
Whole thing was a surprise, because this is the first time in my life I've ever done two records in a row with the same band, or two records in a row with the same sound, or the same in the same genre. I mean, I'm not kidding. It's like, so I've always wondered, you know, because I've always kind of evolved horizontally, if you will, right? And I've always wondered, how would I, you know, evolve vertically? How would I actually, you know, if I stayed in the same thing and with the same band, same genre, same sound, where would it go, you know? And I found out for the first time, you know? So that was exciting to me. I was like, man, this turned out just like I hoped it would, you know? It really did. It really, it's an evolution from, you can hear it from Soul Fire. If you go back to my first solo album, which is the last time I used this sound with the horns, you know, the thing I created with Southside Johnny, Asbury Jukes, right? I carried that into my first album, Men Without Women. So you can kind of go back to Men Without Women and then go to Soul Fire and then go to Summer of Sorcery. You know, it's kind of seeing the evolution of it. And it is a very, very positive evolution, I feel. You know what I mean? It felt like making progress here, you know? And so that's a whole new, literally a whole new artistic rebirth for me right now, which is exciting.
Tell me about the song Love Again.
Well, that character is, like I say, I'm playing a different character in every song. That character is, you know, he's probably had a love affair and probably got burned, you know, a little bit, you know, a little bit unrequited. So he's traveling all around the world, whether it's in his own mind or what, you know, seeing all of these different places and then realizes he just can't kick this addiction of love. He's got to try it again, you know. He's got to go back and do it one more time. So, you know, that's that story. Just a little cute little fiction.
It's interesting that you're saying about you're playing these characters. Do you think that your acting career has seeped into your sort of your musical selves?
I know. That occurred to me, too. When I analyzed it a little bit, I thought to myself, you know, actually, every singer is an actor. You know, they may not realize it, but, you know, the song is kind of the script, and you're kind of convincing people that it is you speaking. I mean, that's why I think music, you know, especially, you know, popular music is probably of all the art forms, seems to be the most autobiographical art form, you know, because you're speaking directly to an audience, and whether you wrote the song or not, you know. I think it didn't hurt, you know, it doesn't hurt that I actually became an actor. But I think actually every singer actually is an actor already.
I'm interested also in another song on the album called Superfly Terraplane. We'll play a little bit for our listeners. What's it about?
Well, this is a character. It's a young millennial, a 17-year-old, and he's basically saying, look, you know, you baby boomers were supposed to fix everything, and, you know, guess what? You haven't. So get out of the way and let us take over now and fix this mess you're leaving us. Overcome attention deficit disorders where I'm coming from. You get 140 characters, then I'm done. You better snap me a picture. You're bored and numb. Hey, old man, get out of my way. I got no interest in anything you gotta say. We're gonna make our own history. You can keep your alibis. We don't need your politicians.
I'm going to make some millennial artists' day, or even Gen Y or Gen Z. Who are you listening to now?
Artist-wise?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm the worst person for that, really. I can't keep up. Because I gotta listen to about 100, you know, we listen to about 100 albums a week for my radio format.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So my world is still traditional rock and roll. You know, okay. I mean, you know. Of which, we counted them the other day, you know, in the last 17 years, we have introduced 1,000 new bands. 1,000.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you know, only a few of them break through because that's the way of the world right now. The infrastructure is not there to support rock and roll anymore. But we have played 1,000 new bands, so that's what I listen to most of the time.
My guest is Steven Van Zandt. We're talking about his new album, Summer of Sorcery. So you're going on the road with us. You're up first.
Yeah, we're doing one more. We did a record release party in L.A. The day after it was released, on May 4th. And May 8th, Asbury Park, and then Europe for 2 months, then America, July, then back to Europe for 2 months, and then 1 month. So America will be July, September, October, and we will continue our teacher solidarity that we've been doing, which is, you know, all they got to do is sign up with Christine at teachrock.org.
Yeah, let's tell people what that is. So your organization, foundation.
The last 12 years or so, we've been creating a music history curriculum. We just went public with it at the end of the Soulfire tour. I mean, literally the last couple of months of the year. And what we do is we put aside 400 or 500 tickets for teachers to come to the show for free, bring a friend. And we just do that out of gratitude, just to say thank you to what the teachers do for us. But the curriculum is free, teachrock.org. We have 150 lessons online, and we keep doing them.
It's pretty cool. So it's a history lesson, and then a clip of like Gil Scott Heron.
Right.
It's sort of as a supplement to whatever that history lesson is.
Yeah, all that's licensed, all the music's licensed, the video's licensed, and it's all free. And then we do a workshop at the show between the sound check and the show for free. And then they come to the show for free. They can bring a friend. And we just literally just got started with this, and we got 25,000 teachers signed up already. So, you know, hitting about 100 kids each, we're over 2 million kids being exposed to this. And we just got started. So we got a big target in our heads. Basically, it was three things. Keep the arts in the DNA of the education system, okay, because it's been devastated by the No Child Left Behind legislation. Ridiculous mistake by our government, one of many. The second thing was we realized we have created a new methodology for teaching, which we desperately need for this millennial generation who are faster than us, smarter than us, and have no patience whatsoever, right? So you can't tell them like they told us, you know, learn this now and someday you'll use it. You know, they want to know, give me something I can use right now.
Has meaning in my life.
You
right
know?
Now. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what this, we do. We use music for that. In other words, we don't drag them to us. We go to them. Who's your favorite artist? You know, and everybody has one, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we just trace them back. You know, whoever it is, you know, it's whatever, Beyonce.
Replacements.
Well, she comes from, yeah, well,
no, I like mean, the replacements.
I mean, now.
Oh, sorry.
Now. I'm not talking to you baby boomers. I'm talking to millennials. So, you know, it's that's Ariana Grande or it's Beyonce or
Vampire
know,
Weekend.
Whoever yeah. it's. And we trace them back. You know, we could go back to, well, she comes from this one and that one, and she comes from Aretha Franklin. And by the way, Aretha Franklin comes from Detroit. We talk about Detroit. Mm-hmm. And she comes from the Gospel Church. We talk about the Gospel Church. And she's involved in civil rights. We talk about civil rights. And they're paying attention. And you understand? They're engaged. And that's what teachers are having trouble with right now. So we that's the second thing, you know. So the first thing was get the arts into the DNA. Second, this new methodology that actually keeps the kids' interest. And the third thing is we're really targeting kids that would usually drop out. We got a serious, serious epidemic going on here, and as many as 50% of the kids in the poor neighborhoods are dropping out.
Yeah.
And then a huge percentage of them end up in prison. And this is really a ridiculous cycle that has to be broken. And so we're working on that. On that, the last statistic I just saw was if 5%, if the graduation rate improves by 5%, it saves the country $18 billion in
wow.
crime costs, not counting the suffering of the families and the communities, right? You know, so, you know, so we got a 5-year plan to deal with that. We got 150,000 teachers we plan on getting in the next 5 years, you know, which will be like cover like whatever 15 million kids, you know, I mean millions of kids.
Yeah.
And we will affect that 5%, you know. And you know, right now we're budgeted $100 million over the next 5 years to save $18 billion, you know. And so that's a, you know, it's a nice percentage, and I think you know, we're really quite sure we can do that, cuz we're already, the teachers are thanking us because they got the kids' attention, and the kids that always are the trouble kids or the ones that just aren't yeah. interested in science and math whatsoever, they're interested in music. They all got somebody.
Of course.
So that's, it's working already, and we're just getting started. So we'll see where that goes, but we're gonna continue to do that now forever. Yeah.
My guest is Steven Van Zandt. The name of his new album is Summer of Sorcery. Little Steven, the Disciples of Soul, will be performing on May 8th at the Paramount Theater in Asbury Park, New Jersey. And before you go, I have to ask you about the documentary that's coming out about Asbury Park.
Which one? Oh, that one, yeah.
Yeah, Riot, Redemption, Rock and Roll.
Yeah, it was. I talked to the cat when it was just like an idea. And so I participated very early. I said, you know, I want to encourage him, you know, to kind of document what happened, you know, and now it turned into a real film. You know, it's really quite exciting. I saw an early version of it, and it was great. You know, it basically talks about a lot of things, you know, the riots and you know, how the black neighborhood and the white neighborhoods, you know, were kind of side by side, but you know, didn't mix all that much, and you know, just how we kind of transformed it back into something that was relevant, and now the town's completely rebuilt, and so it's really happening right now. So it's nice, but it's a good film. It's interesting, actually. It's very well, I'm glad they did it. You know?
Why was it important for you to participate in that film? You did. Bruce Springsteen did. A bunch of other artists.
Yeah, I wanted, you know, because it was our roots. It was a very important part of our lives, and you know, that whole scene, really, me and Bruce and Southside Johnny and the Jersey Shore thing, it kind of came at a good time, you know what I mean? In mid-70s, you know, I think everybody needed, they're looking around for some kind of kick, some kind of something, you know, to see where things were going to go, you know, and all of a sudden we kind of popped up in a weird, out-of-the-industry way. You know what I mean? The fact that we weren't in New York or L.A.
Mm-hmm.
was, I think, gave a lot of people hope in the smaller towns.
Yeah.
You know, like, if it could happen in Asbury Park, New Jersey, man, it can happen in Seattle, you
mm-hmm.
know, or, you know, or you know, wherever, Memphis or whatever, you know. So that was, you know, I think that was kind of important in a weird, you know, peripheral way. You know, I mean, it was not, we were not mainstream at all, you know. And it took vision of guys like Steve Popovich to have a live broadcast of Southside Johnny from the Stone Pony in Asbury Park nationwide, which had never been done. You know, there's no such thing as a nationwide live broadcast unless you're in New York or L.A., you know. So just those little moves that we made, you know, with guys like Steve Popovich's help back then, really brought in this local, you know, that whole bar band consciousness, you know, into rock and roll, which I think reconnected us to the roots, as punk did, you know, which would come just a year or two later. But it was kind of related, you know, kind of what we did and what punk did was kind of similar in that bringing things back to a local level, kind of accessible, not so, you know, glitzy and you know, getting away from the whole glam, disco, kind of progressive music consciousness of sophistication, you know.
It was just a good music.
You know.
Heart music.
Yeah.
Just simple, of the guts.
Simple, yeah, you know. And we were dance bands, you know. We had people dancing to rock and roll, all right, in 75, 74. You know, long after it had stopped. I mean, you know, people had stopped dancing to rock and roll somewhere in the late 60s and just started listening. You know, all got stoned and started listening. and that's my definition of when things started to go downhill. But we kind of brought dancing back in 74, you know. But in those days, people were dancing to rock and roll. That's the difference, which I still want to bring back again. You know, I've been trying to get my Underground Garage Go-Go show back on TV for years now. But I want to show people that again, where people dancing to rock and roll. You know, I think it would be popular again if we did it, you know. But anyway, that was the difference. And so it's nice that it was captured on film with this new documentary.
Which will be out soon. And you're playing Asbury Park on May 8th at the Paramount Theater. Steven Van Zandt, thanks for being here.
Good to see you.
This is All of It on WNYC.